You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
Welcome to another edition of Influence, the global podcast that shines a spotlight on the influencer marketing industry. My name is Gordon Glenister. And for those of you that don't know me, I'm a keynote speaker, trainer, and consultant in the sector, and more recently, published author on influencer marketing strategy. In this podcast series, you're going to hear me interview all sorts of people from the world of influencer marketing. But before we start, please don't forget to subscribe to this podcast just to make sure that you don't miss a future episode. Today, I'm talking with a managing partner of Canadian-based InBeat agency, David Morneau. Now, InBeat makes scaling paid advertising easy by providing brands and consumer-focused companies with engaging user-generated content, or what we call UGC. From their network of micro-influencers on both Instagram and TikTok. So I wanted to ask David about getting brand buy-in to influencer marketing. And so I started by asking him a little bit about his journey into the influencer space. And here's what he had to say.
InBeat essentially is both a mix of a software and agency. We do offer both solutions. We were created back as an SEO agency when we realized that some of our clients were asking for micro-influencer marketing services, and we just took and ran with it. There's a lot of similarities between link building and influencer marketing in the sense that it's a short sales cycle. You're looking to pitch multiple people, negotiate them, onboard them, and so forth. So lots of similarities between both processes. We took it and ran with it. The industry is consistently growing. So as you can imagine, the number of clients we onboarded grew as well. So here we are today running an influencer marketing agency specializing in micro influencers, and we're keeping at it.
Yeah, that's brilliant. And you mentioned, of course, micro-influencers, which is where the growth has been over the last few years. I mean, in the early days of advertising, it was all about celebrity endorsement, but it's really dropped down the scale, isn't it, to mega, micro, and even nano-influencers, to be honest. So why do you think that is?
So a couple of things, right? Macro-influencers are extremely expensive, so they're a lot of a hit-or-miss kind of campaign. If you know you pay $25,000 for a single collaboration turns out to be ROI negative, then it's a big hit you can take, right? If you repeat that experiment multiple times, you can eat up a budget pretty fast. So micro-influencers are much cheaper per collaboration. On another level, micro-influencers also create content just as much as the bigger influencers do. So, you know, you end up with a lot more content for your buck than if you were working with a single bigger influencer. We really appreciate working with micro-influencers for a couple of reasons. One of them is that they don't have an agent, meaning that the relationship is much leaner. It makes it so much easier for us to actually run and create these collaborations with them.
That's good to hear. So let's just talk a little bit about this subject of reaching out to brands that are in this sort of not sure mode. Perhaps they've done a little bit of influencer marketing before. Maybe they've tried it for themselves, hasn't really delivered because they haven't sort of seen the return on the investment, even at a micro level. What's your process that you go through, and how do you convince them to continue or to invest more?
So first off, there's really about recognizing the strong suit of the brand we have in front of us. So essentially, micro-influencer really outshines other channels when a brand has a lot of goodwill, brand equity built into it. It's a cool brand. People want to represent it. We have to see that relationship as two-sided, right? It's a relation between you and the influencer, and the influencer is going to be posting that to their page. So if your brand has good brand equity, good design, good website, good, you know, value set, it becomes much easier to use micro-influencer marketing as a strategy. So that's one thing we'll do. We'll evaluate, okay, what's the brand fit? If your brand looks like a drop shipping website, it becomes extremely hard to pull off micro-influencer marketing, and it becomes extremely transactional. So the fees will go up and so forth. So we do look at that. And after that, it's really about evaluating, okay, what are the needs of each client that we have in front of us? So rather be like, okay, we want to drive sales. We want to drive awareness. We want to drive content. We want to drive market insights. These are essentially the pillars on which we see campaigns being built. And that's really what we'll evaluate. So what are you looking for as a brand? Are you looking for insight on like which product you should be developing next? How you should position your product? Are you looking to create content for your paid media and your website? If so, content quality should be one of your higher selection criteria when selecting the influencers. Are you looking to drive sales and awareness? So if that's your criteria, then you might as well go down an ambassador route where you take these influencers and you take your top performing influencers and you convert them into ambassadors. So all of a sudden, you can reactivate them every 1 month, 2 months, whatever you feel like doing. And it becomes a way for you to create a channel that's repeatable and works extremely well. So yeah, those are really the kind of problems you can solve with influencer marketing. So if you have one of those needs as a brand and we feel our solution fits into your bigger strategy, then that's really how we'll implement and roll out our processes.
And then I guess the biggest challenge often is budget. You may say to the prospective client, well, how much budget have you got? And you might well receive a response that says, well, I don't know. I don't know how much to allocate to influencer marketing, because in some instances, you might run a gifted campaign with a micro influencer. But there are other cases, of course, where you may well still need to pay for it. And obviously, there's your fees as well on top of that. So how does somebody cost and budget a campaign?
Let's take the kind of influencer slash ambassador route, because that's most standard. If you're looking at that, you know, it really depends. What's the value of your product? Is it feasible to imagine a scenario where you give products to influencers and they create posts and they share their promo code? Is that a scenario that's realistic? And if you're unsure, then, you know, reach out to 100 influencers and you'll have a pretty good answer of that. So really about budgeting, it's like, okay, well, how much will I need to pay each influencer, right? For micro influencers, you can go from seeding all the way to paying a couple hundred dollars, even more, you know, depending on the campaign, what kind of content you're asking for. But that's really how you should see it. So, and I think the best way to do it for brands is, if they're unsure of the budget, is like, test it, run a pilot, run through your current client base. Do you have any influencers in your client base? Are they interacting with you on your social media? You should reach out to them, see, you know, can you make them into influencers, provide them with a promo code, send them pre-product, and see if there's a hit there. In case of uncertainty, then I know some businesses will come to the table and will say, we've got $25,000 for a pilot, right? So it's like, okay, well, what can we do with that $25,000? And then we can take it from there. But some businesses are unsure, don't have the budget necessarily. So in that case, what I really recommend doing is DM the people that are already following your brand and that have a decent following. Send them some free product they've already bought for you, or they're following you. So it makes sense to do that. And then test it. Is this a viable channel for the long term? And if it is, then you can think about hiring a partner, like, and run with it.
So I'm assuming in many instances, from my own experiences, is that sometimes people will invest more in influencer marketing as the return on investment grows and they get the sort of scalability. Those that haven't done it before would potentially be running a pilot, even either on their own or with an agency. Once they start to see the success of that, they may well want to invest more. But of course, the other challenge sometimes you can face is a client's expectations are wrong. You know, that they think that one post, one story is going to move the needle. And often it isn't. In the same way that, I guess, if you go and watch TV or go and look at a billboard once, you don't rush out to the store and go buy that product, do you?
Exactly. That's kind of the agency life, right? You know, setting the client's expectations, making sure that everything is set clearly. The way we look at it is, this is a numbers game. If we get 10 influencers, two of them will outperform the other eight. And then those two, we need to build a relationship with them and make sure that we onboard them as long-term collaborators, right? So that's really the name of the game. Get the best influencers and run with them. Just create a small network and then build that network. Think of it as like an affiliate program, right? A little different, but it has the same dynamic in the sense that you're looking to have an outsourced kind of sales team, right? These influencers become some part of it. They're selling your product. They're putting your product forward. They're creating content for you. So you identify the top performers, you run with them, make sure you keep a good relationship with them, and that's the name of the game.
So although we've discussed some of them, what are some of the objections that typically an organization would give?
The ROI is probably one of the bigger ones. That's really the one we hear a lot, or we're not sure how much to pay each influencer, or, you know, the price per collaboration is too high, whatever it is, right? They're all around the budget component of it. There's a lot of uncertainty, and it's not an AdWords or Facebook ads kind of traditional digital, I guess. Yeah. It's more typical where you just put money in a platform and then you can see your return on ad spend pretty instantly. You can see all those metrics right away. Influencer marketing is something that you need to build out. And at some point you end up with an army of ambassadors that are hyper targeted and just drive sales for you consistently as soon as you activate them. So there's a lot of the buildup that's probably where the education needs to take place.
Yeah. I mean, what about bloggers, for example, and YouTubers? Because you've got opportunities there where it's long form content and it will remain around. If you're working with a blogger to write an article for you, of course, you know, that's not just about a one hit wonder. That blog will remain in play for quite some time, so that actually the brand could be generating reoccurring eyeballs, couldn't it? I mean, if you look at some of these big YouTube videos, Charlie Bit My Finger, I was looking at the other day, it was 879 million views. And what they did was they did another version of it where they were grown up. The two children were much older. And that in itself just got 6 million views. I guess also it's about educating clients, isn't it? About not just the influencers, but it's about the type of content, the type of campaign. Because you can have the right influencers, but the wrong campaign, can't you?
Exactly. Positioning is extremely important. Understanding how we're going to position our product within a campaign is vital to the success. Then after that, it's really about understanding the client's goals and strategy, right? And how influencer marketing can fit into that, right? Are they looking to power their paid media? Are they looking to whitelist influencer posts? Like, those are all things we see, right? And it's really about understanding, where does our service offering really fit within this strategy that the client has?
Are you able to sort of share some case studies or some examples of where perhaps you've spoken to some people and you've managed to convince them to spend more because of the campaign? In other words, you've got a not sure client and all of a sudden you've put something in place and rocket fuel success.
The way this works really well is we start with one channel. Say we start with Instagram. We run it from there, right? We run a campaign with Instagram. We outreach to influencers every month. We onboard them, have them post, identify the top performers, recollaborate with them down the line, build that small army. Then we move to another channel. That becomes a really good upsell. Or we want more influencers to be collaborating with on an ongoing basis. It's all about activation, right? Like, if you want to run a campaign, how many people can you activate instantly? Meaning like influencers for which we have addresses, we know that they will post, we know that they drive sales. That's really the name of the game. Once you can prove those things, you know, sky is the limit.
So you're building up a black book of ideal influencers that, as you rightly say, you've got all of that detail, and it's almost like you're an agency representing talent, of course. So it's a great way of looking at it. I was just going to say, have you got any specific case study, any particular brands that resonate that you can cite some examples?
Yeah, so we work with a cell phone accessory brand called Phone Loops. We've built an ambassador network for them. I think we have on book right now 1,000+ ambassadors that we can consider VVIPs, is how we call them. And we've just scaled that consistently throughout the years. It was actually our first client that bought micro-influencer marketing from us. So it's interesting to still have them on board. But essentially, now we're rolling out to TikTok, and, you know, we've done Instagram quite well. So it's just about replicating what we're doing there. So the upsell becomes really easy. Then beyond that, you come to a point where a client wants, you know, ABC type of content, then you can create a brief around the content types that your client wants. And then you can upsell that too, right? It becomes like, okay, well, what are your needs? And then what's your strategy? How does our service fit into that? You're looking to scale your paid media. You need more creative. Then okay, let's work on that. You want to right, TikTok, okay, let's step into that and so forth.
And how much do you reckon influencer content has been involved in additional paid media? In other words, you know, great content that's seen by an influencer and the brand wants to spend money to promote that even further. How much of that do you see as happening? So not just organic on its own. I'm talking about the brand then investing more in using some of that creator content behind an ad campaign.
We're seeing a lot of brands retarget using influencer-generated content. Those budgets are growing increasingly. I mean, it's a strong way to drive tons of creative assets. So yeah, that's something we're seeing across the scale. Yeah.
But when that happens, is the influencer rewarded for that? Because obviously, if it's a gifted campaign and they're just receiving a gift, that's one thing. But if they're producing content that's then being used on other forms of advertising media, I'm just wondering, is the content creator rewarded for that?
Yeah, definitely. That's all about deal structure, right? How you want to structure your deals and how you want to run with the influencers. But we make it a case that we will reward influencers whom we use their content in our paid media. It's easy with micro influencers because it's such a buyer's market. There's a lot of micro creators rising up, and it's like there's a lot of exploitation you can do as like a brand. So you have to be careful about that because these people are representing your brand in some way. So just meeting them down the middle, giving them some kind of monetary compensation to reuse their content is more than welcome. I mean, it makes sense. They're creators, they're creating content, you're reusing it, you're making a profit off of it. So yeah, we do compensate for content that we'll use in paid media, 100%.
Just going back to the Phone Loops brand that you were alluding to, what do you think has been the success of why that has been? Are there any particular salient points that we could offer as sort of some takeaway tips for our audience?
What makes it successful is just the sheer number of product we can ship. The cost of goods sold is so low that we can ship a lot and play the numbers game, right? So if, you know, we ship 10 products, we can expect 6 of them to post, 2 of them just are great, and we add them to our VVIPs, right? And then you can play that numbers game a lot. Whereas if you're working with a brand that has a higher cost of good, it can become a different challenge, right? You want to pre-vet much more because it becomes a very different game you're playing. So the low cost of good is probably good. And that there's also the fact that it's an impulse buy. So you can just go and say, oh, cool, I want that. Like I drop my phone all the time and you go and buy it. So pretty simple impulse buy under $20 makes it hyper easy for people to just purchase without thinking about it twice. So that's really, I think, two of the parameters that helped us scale this program to where it is. Of course, you can run different strategies for other types of brand where the cost of good is higher or distribution is done inside retailers. Then it becomes a different strategy. Like, how do we go with this? What are we looking for? And so forth. Again, aligning our solution with the client's need is a must.
And presumably you're evaluating everything all of the time because of the nature of it being a digital campaign. So if you're able to determine which influencers are working well and the type of content that they're using, you can almost spread the word amongst others, particularly if it's an ambassador program. Are you building a community around the ambassadors? Is there somebody that's managing that community?
We are not yet, Gordon, but it's in our pipeline of services that we're going to roll out. There's definitely huge power around community. We're trying to crack that. Community is hard because you need some brand equity or else it's just not going to stick together. And, you know, to have a community, you need members, nodes in a community to interact with each other. And that's where the complexity is. If you don't have that, then the reverse effect can happen where people feel like, oh, this is not a cool community to be part of because people aren't interacting. And then it becomes a very hard challenge. Now, we can see community being an easy solve for companies that are in hobbyist kind of niches. Gardening, for instance, is a good example. People that are into gardening are into gardening. Like they love it, they want advice about it and so forth. I think drawing too is probably the same, right? These communities are easy to build, right? In the sense that the niche is built around a hobby, so it's super easy. Talk about a cell phone accessory now, and it becomes quite harder to actually build a community about it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. All right, well, just to finish then, it's been really great to talk with you today. What would you say as an entrepreneur, as a business owner, was your biggest lesson that you've learned on this journey?
Recruiting good people and making sure that they stay is probably like the thing that I've learned, at least recently, you know, that to be the most important factor, having a good leadership team to carry this agency and the software forward is really what I'd say my key learning has been.
This podcast is supported by the Branded Content Marketing Association, promoting the value of influencer marketing globally.
That's it for another edition of Influence. Don't forget to subscribe to the show and give me your feedback, gordon@gordonglenister.com, or you can follow me on LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter, where you can also ask me a question. If you're able to give us a 5-star review, we really do appreciate it. And for those of you that want help in creating an influencer marketing strategy or want to join the Influencer Marketing Roundtable weekly event, do head over to my website, which is gordonglenister.com. Thanks as always to my producer, Neil Whiteside from Freedom One. And until next time, from me, Gordon Glenister, it's bye for now.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.